It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Ernest Hancock, because we know some stuff. You know, let's learn some more stuff. You know, that's what fear usually is. It's just, you just don't know. You know, if you know more about things, you know, words that are used to cloud your mind. You know, it's the mind fog. Let's clear that away a little bit and learn some stuff. Because you get on the lamestream media, the media that's so last century, they throw out words you don't really know what it means. Words like sanctions, you know? Oh, that sounds like, oh, you know, slap on the wrist or something, yeah? Until you're the one being sanctioned. You know, this is, we have on today Joy Gordon. She's a professor in the philosophy department at Fairfield University in Connecticut and is currently a senior fellow at the Global Justice Program at the Macmillan Center, Yale University. And she's just written a book called The Invisible War. Invisible War, the United States and the Iraq Sanctions. I got you there, Professor?
You do. I'm glad to be here.
Joy Gordon, Professor, I look to you to explain to me the power of sanctions. And now that, when you say that, you can call it the, I don't know what else you would call it, boycotts, you know, blockades. I mean, you know, I don't know, it goes by war. I mean, it goes by a lot of names, but sanctions mean what?
Well, as an exercise of international governance, they really started with the League of Nations after World War One, and the idea was that in the aftermath of the horrors of World War One, there was kind of a sense of what can the international community do to respond to aggression that itself is not a kind of violence that will escalate the aggression. So the League of Nations is formed, and the mechanism they come up with to respond to aggression is sanctions. They call it the boycott. And they have this vision of it. Woodrow Wilson describes it as a peaceful, silent, deadly remedy, that if you cut off trade, communication, transportation to any country, it will not be violent, but it will shut the place down. And that was the image. So if you even take that phrase, a peaceful, silent, deadly remedy, it's a very odd phrase, because if you take out the word silent, then you've got peaceful and deadly. So it's this, so that contradiction is really kind of what shapes sanctions for the next century. It's viewed as something harmless, yet powerful.
Deadly. Deadly. I mean, you know, I got some deadly in there. So this is, I understand the use of it as a weapon, but it has it always been what it is, back then, or has it morphed into something more assertive, aggressive? Because I'm looking at Iran, they're saying, you know, this is aggression. I'm wondering, who's Iran aggressed against?
Well, sanctions were primarily a tool for the powerful countries against the smaller countries. If you look at instances of nations imposing sanctions on other nations, between the end of World War II and about 1990, the U.S. was responsible for about 75% of those acting unilaterally. So it really was primarily a device that the U.S. or sometimes the Soviet Union would use to really compromise a smaller country or a more vulnerable country. But the thing is that during the Cold War, it wasn't possible for sanctions to be devastating because they could never be comprehensive. if the U.S. sanctioned a country, they could trade with the Soviet Union and vice versa. So in the case of Cuba, certainly the blockade, the embargo against Cuba, affected the economy, but didn't devastate it because Cuba just traded with the Eastern Bloc. So sanctions never had an enormous humanitarian impact up until 1990. With the Security Council, it was also affected by the Cold War. So the Security Council itself was really paralyzed because the U.S. and the USSR were both permanent members with veto power. If the U.S. wanted to punish the Soviet Union or a client state of the Soviets, they would block that and vice versa. So the Security Council didn't do much of anything. They imposed sanctions in the case of South Africa, but otherwise it really wasn't in a position to do much of anything. So up until 1990, no one really thought about the humanitarian impact of sanctions. It just wasn't on the map at all. When people talked about sanctions or when political scientists looked at it, really what they looked at were things like what's the chance that you can get the target country to do what you want? How effective are sanctions in terms of getting the country to comply? But no one looked at the humanitarian impact. All of that changed with Iraq, because in August of 1990, the Soviet Union had really imploded and was not any kind of a counterweight any longer to the U.S. within the Security Council. So Iraq invades Kuwait, and then it's possible, really for the first time in the history of global governance, for one country to sort of secure the will of the entire international community. Because when the Security Council acts under, it's called Chapter 7 of the UN Charter, which is the part that gives it a mandate to respond to aggression, breaches of the peace, and threats of the peace. And it's really pretty open-ended about what the Security Council can do. It can use economic measures or diplomatic measures or force. And when it imposes one of those measures, every member state of the United Nations is bound to enforce it. So this was the first time that a measure that had been comprehensive was then also necessarily had the enforcement of every nation on earth. And these measures were comprehensive. They were not at all like the ones on South Africa. These blocked off, prohibited Iraq from any form of external trade, and obviously Iraq was highly dependent on oil. It blocked Iraq from importing any goods at all except medicine. And Iraq was a country that was highly dependent on imports for everything, including food, for example. And every nation in the world was bound to abide by this.
Okay, let me go ahead and interject some comments here, and I need your responses to this, because I can see what's going to happen. You know, when we finally have, because it used to be a game played between the Eastern Bloc and, you know, U.S. and allies and such, there's always, we're going to do this, well, fine, if we do that, then we're going to throw them into the sphere of influence of the Soviet Union. So we can't do it, and we're ouch quit it back and forth, and then we'll bribe them more, or we'll leave them alone more, or we'll promise them more. So you start having all these countries starting being divvied up over the cross the entire planet, going one side or the other. The Soviet Union finally goes to Afghanistan to die, so it finally goes. Then we have the United Nations, a big, giant organization that, I guess, you know, if you bribe them with green fees and escorts or whatever, you can pretty much get them to do whatever you want at whatever level. And what has happened is that now we have a consolidation of intent that we are going to punish whoever we can get away with, but what happens, though, is that all you do, and Iraq was a perfect example of this, and hopefully, I think we did learn the lesson, the government's learned the lesson, they're just using it to their advantage. All you do is consolidate power with guys at the top, because whatever is left, they sure as heck keep for themselves. The people, what they want is for the people to suffer enough that they will overthrow their own government. And if we get rid of them, well, then everything will be okay, and peace cheeses and cream. But it doesn't seem like that really happens. They have a resentment towards the people that are causing them the suffering. They don't react in the way that I think that they anticipated that they would go, you know, we get rid of, oh, we're going to, Ahmadinejad, we're going to go ahead and get rid of him because it's because of him that we have these sanctions. I think that people more consolidate themselves around their own nationalism or their own leader or whatever. And then we have the United States and the rest of the world as their enemy. Or am I wrong? When we come back, I want to go ahead and talk about that very thing. Our experience, as Professor Gordon has talked about, from Iraq. Did we learn something from that? Are we taking advantage of that? Are we going to repeat the same thing? Is it going to have the same result? Are we hoping for a different result? I need to know, because this whole sanction thing, it has blowback. Is it going to be good? Bad? I don't know. You stay right there. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
As I'm getting older, your people get colder. Most of us only care about money making. Selfishness got us following the wrong direction. Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young minds faster than bacteria. Kids wanna act like what they see in the cinema. Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling under. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling down. It's no wonder why sometimes I'm feeling under. Gotta keep my faith alive, love is found. Ask yourself.
Oh, it's right here on Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock. And I bet you Professor Gordon's got a little bit of love in her heart, too. We have Professor Joy Gordon, author of Invisible War, the United States and the Iraq Sanctions. And the one thing I want to make sure we get back to is I want to understand, did we learn anything from the sanctions before that they just kind of build up to a prelude to war and invasion, and hopefully that the people will be in such a state that they'll go, yay, Americans here, save us, you know, give us like a job. I mean, are they really think that they're going to get the positive result? Did they get a positive result from sanctions ever since 1990 in Iraq or anywhere else?
Well, actually, if I could go back to something you were saying before the break, which is how countries usually respond to sanctions. And you're exactly right. You were saying, isn't there kind of a greater consolidation of power in the country that's sanctioned? So if the idea is sanctions take a bite out of the place, well, it depends on who they take a bite out of. But if the idea is we sanction a country, this sends a message to the people that there's something wrong with their government, and therefore they overthrow it, that's often the vision, but that doesn't happen. What happens is, as you were saying, there's something like a rally around the flag effect. And if you think of it this way, let's say someone in your family is not the nicest person, but if someone outside your family attacks all of you, then you'll rally around that person because that's your family. So you may not like what he does, but you like even less some outsiders trying to tell you what you should do about someone that's your family.
But haven't we learned this? Hasn't the United States, hasn't the world learned? I mean, if we didn't have an opportunity to learn before, we sure as heck have had an opportunity, as you say, since the fall of the Soviet Union, and we have these people that have sanctions placed on them. They don't really have anywhere to go except Iran. I mean, there's always, you know, the tighter your grip, the more star systems that leak, you know, escape between your fingers. Well, where's Iran getting its support? From China. You know, so China's coming in, you know, buying and selling and oil and then dealing and whatever. Are they supporting these sanctions or not?
Well, in general, what happens is that whenever you sanction a country, first of all, there's certainly a lot of leakage. There's lots of ways for countries to trade and get around the sanctions, whether it's through China or other countries. But the other thing is, the data shows that there's very little likelihood that the country will actually do what you're trying to get it to do. the most optimistic measurements say that in something like a third of the cases, the state that's targeted will do what you want it to, except those are in cases, in most of those cases, there are sanctions, but there's something else. You know, maybe there's military intervention too. So, even though it's only a third, even in that third, you can't really tell if the sanctions were the ones that caused the state to do what you demanded of it.
So it might have been that shock and awe thing.
Could have been a shock and awe thing. If you cut out those factors and say, how many cases are there where we can say that the sanctions itself caused that state to do what was demanded of it? And then that number drops to something like 3%. So however you cut it, you just can't say that sanctions are likely to work. If by work, what you mean is get that targeted state to do whatever it is you're demanding of it.
Well, they're trying everything. I mean, we just have today on Freedom's Phoenix, Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com is our website. And we have on there right now, top story is U.S. will announce Monday hundreds of millions of dollars worth of civilian aid projects for Pakistan. American officials said in an attempt to demonstrate that Washington has broadened its relationship with the country away from just anti-terror cooperation to helping the people of Pakistan. No, it's bribing them. And it's always money from poor people in rich countries like the United States that is given to rich people in poor countries. And then it never makes it down to the people. It's like the North Korea goes, oh, yeah, you want nuclear weapons? You know what? Right here, I'll send you Polaroids. So what do? We're going, all right, we send them a bunch of food and stuff. And, you know, please don't get desperate. And we love you long time, or at least this month. And then here's North Korea. What are they going to do? Give the food to the people? Heck no. They give it to their own military and such. I mean, this is such, it's so obvious what's going on. It's so stupid. It's not about getting control of, I'm not even sure what it's about other than these wars aren't meant to be fought. I mean, to be won, they're just meant to be fought and to continually supply this excuse for control of Washington over whomever they want to. And I just see it as a bleeding that is going to just drive us into hell. We're already in depression. So I'm looking at these sanctions and I'm going, to what end? What is it that you're afraid of? And then they'll say they haven't aggressed against anyone, as far as I know. It's the threat of possible maybe future aggression with a nuclear weapon. I'm going, heck, if I was Iran, I mean, you know, if I buy him a dozen at a time, do I get a discount? You know, from Russia, China? And who's to say they haven't already? And who the heck is to say that we have some kind of a moral ability to say they can't? When everywhere around them, we are aggressing of all of their neighbors, all around them, and we're going to say, yeah, but you're not allowed to protect yourself against a superpower like us. You're not. You deliberately ducked and you're not allowed. I find that to be interesting, to say the least. Comment.
Well, let me pick one of the threads out of that if I can.
Can they have nuclear weapons? I want to know that one right there. Should Iran be able to defend itself any way he wants? You know, somebody comes over and starts choking me, and I want to defend my life. Guess what? I pull out the first machine gun I can find, okay? So I'm just going, how are we morally superior to say they can't defend themselves against an obvious aggressor like us?
Well, I'm not sure I'm quite equipped to address that. What I actually would like to address is something else you said a little earlier when you were talking about aid to Pakistan. And let me flip that on its head a little bit and say, if what we're supposed to be doing is, for example, in the case of where we're saying the state is violating its own citizens' human rights, so in the case of Cuba, for example, or to some extent Iraq, we said this of Iraq too, and then we say, okay, so we're now imposing sanctions on you so that you rise up against this dictator who is oppressing you. But the thing about sanctions is they're indiscriminate. They're virtually always indiscriminate. So if the idea is to do harm to or to put pressure on the leaders, the political elite and the military leadership, sanctions don't do that because those are exactly the ones who are insulated against the effects of sanctions until the very end or maybe always, all the way down. Whereas the people who are hurt first and who are hurt worst is the civilian population. So it's if you contract the economy in sort of in the way that our economy has just contracted, who takes the hit? And the answer is the poor. And then when the poverty gets very extreme, it'll be infants, children, women, the elderly, and the sick.
Well, the short time that we have left here, I just want to ask you, this whole sanction thing against Iran is why? Is it because what? What's the excuse?
Well, the reasoning has to do, or at least the way that the Security Council has framed it, has to do with Iraq's nuclear capacity. I'm sorry, Iran's nuclear capacity. Iran obviously takes the view that it has a right to develop not only weapons for self-defense, but also to generate energy.
In my opinion.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Turn on the tube.
Me, Ernest Hancock. Yeah, Joy couldn't stay longer than the half hour. I wish she could, and I tried to stretch her out a little bit. But the one thing is I wanted to get an answer to the question. Sanctions, it's like, that's an act of war. I mean, I don't know what else you call it. You know, it's somebody's parent telling you what you can and can't do. I can tell you that. So I don't see, there hasn't been a success really ever doing sanctions, you know, entangling the alliance with none, fair trade, open trade, everybody. You know, I mean, that was something that was learned a long time ago by founders of this country. You know, they were, you know, they got it. You know, I don't see what's so hard about it. But here we have the U.S. unveiling large aid package to win the hearts of Pakistanis. No, it's to bribe them. You think they're, you know, what, are they dumping it out, pallets on, you know, helicopters? You know, seriously? Hillary Clinton, on her way to a key international conference in Afghanistan, will unveil a raft of U.S.-funded development projects Monday. They will cover sectors including water supply, electricity production, agriculture, and health, as the U.S. implements its pledge to triple civilian aid to key ally Pakistan. The previous administration of President George W. Bush had focused most aid on Pakistan's military, which then ruled the country, causing resentment in the country that felt it was being manipulated to further U.S. goals. And who do you think they're going to give this money to? Who, the same people they gave it to before, just for something else. You know, the same guy's going to get their cut. It's not going to make it. It's all PR. And this is the whole point that I've been making over the past week. These funding bills that they have to the tune of $55 billion for Afghan, Iraq, whatever the heck, the supplemental kind of just give us more money. Where do you think this stuff goes? And that has been these groups that are coming out saying, us. Me. Oh, Mr. Qatar, I want mine. You know, I got my hand raised. Give me. And that's what's been going on. You know, this is, it'll cover sectors including water supply, electricity production, agricultural, health. I mean, you know, and then, of course, you know, there'll be, you know, the school thing. You know, they're going to, wow. You know, this is, fortunately, we have the ability with the internet, and which is why they're going to, you know, get used to the idea that's going to change. And that's one thing that we're going to have some more guests on talking about, what they're doing to Facebook and what they're doing to WordPress and what they're doing to, you know, this Internet 2.0 thing that they want to accomplish. Because they don't want this kind of information coming out. Once the money gets, you know, stolen from you or your grandkids and great-grandkids get indebted, then they take that and they redistribute it to their buddies somewhere else, and I guarantee they get their cut, whoever they are. Those won't leave us alone. This is how empires die, and it is on its way out. And all this money, these billions of dollars, are what? You know, just printed money. It's just made up. What do you think is going to happen? This is allowed because of something is wrong. Something has been, you know, it's broken us. You know, and I don't really blame people as much as I just want to point it out. Because sooner or later, you know, the people rise up. They always do. In various ways. They don't necessarily, you know, get a gun and go marching on whatever with their pitchfork, torch, and AR. You know, that's just, you know, people aren't really wired that way. They just assume not. You know, it's not so much that, you know, they are afraid or cower in the, you know, going and fighting for their right. They just don't feel good about killing somebody else, about violence, about damage. You know, a vast amount of damage and hurt and pain and terrorism and vandalism and stuff is often caused by those that benefit from it that didn't get blamed for it. You know, it's this agent provocateur thing. It's the governments that do it. They need bad guys. They need violence. They need this kind of stuff. They need a scapegoat. They need somebody that's what they always need. That's what justifies their existence. I want to talk to you today. I went this weekend and I saw the movie Inception, and it really had an impact on me. Like, you know, a lot of good movies do that have a message. This one's a little bit different than the ones that I usually anticipate will be big blockbusters. I don't know when it came out. I guess a week or two ago. I'm sure it's very popular. I hear about everybody, you know, yeah, it's a good movie. You got to go see it. So I'm sure it's going to be big blockbuster. But, you know, I can tell you why. I mean, you know, I mean, it's a good movie, but it's more than that. It's a multi-layer movie. It's kind of like The Matrix kind of thing, not just in the special effects, but, I mean, and the impact it has on your thought process that you even think, that you even have to. I'm not going to spoil the movie for you, so, you know, you can listen to this without getting too scared. But, you know, go see it. I suggest you go see it. I'm going to start using it. Certainly when it comes out on DVD, I'm going to take pieces and parts out of it, and I'll, you know, make points just like I do with a lot of other movies. But The Matrix is the one that probably, I think, really got me the most first. It was, when was that? I think it was 95 or 7 or something. It was early on. That was a long time ago. And when that movie first came out, that was one of the first movies I ever went and saw again right away. Later that day or early the next day, I'm like, did I see what I think I saw? I did. I saw a Free Mariana kind of movie on a deep, deep, deep level. This is what Inception is basically about, and I'm going to tell you, you know, my interpretation, which has nothing to do with the movie, so maybe you'll even enjoy it more, and there won't be any spoilers. Inception, the word, is the inception of an idea, the beginning of something. You know, at inception, you know, let's look up a wiki on the word, because there is always the beginning of something. Where did you get that idea from? Where did that come from? How were you inspired? You know, what? Well, let's go ahead and take a look. The film Inception, refer to film definition. Okay, definition. The beginning of something, such as an undertaking, a commencement, origin. If you have an idea that is not deeper than another truth that you know, that truth will wipe it out. I'll give you an example. I started looking for the truth even as a young child. You know, I asked a lot of questions of my parents, and my dad would just, you know, he'd exaggerate or embellish on a bunch of stuff just to shut me up. Yeah, well, why? Well, he was not, he didn't have the internet, and he'd make it up as he went along or whatever, and I could tell, you know, or I find out later. So finally I'm like, yeah, okay, I won't ask him. And I started doing my own research. You know, I would ask, I want to know. And now we have the internet. I mean, heck, we'd be out to dinner. We're talking. Everybody just pulls out their Blackberries and just boom. You know, you forget. What was an actor in that one? What was the one thing? What was the name of that? What was it? Boom. Done. This is fantasy land, you know, for us in the 60s and 70s and 80s and even 90s. This is fantasy land. That you would even have the world's accumulated knowledge in the palm of your hand. I got a little laptop. It's a little bit more than a netbook, but it doesn't have a drive in it. You know, it's like 2 gig RAM. You know, it's a nice little thing I get from Verizon. I have one that I use to travel with. So I bought one because it's $100. You know, that's really like $600. But of course, you got to have your, you know, your subscription to your internet thing. So I got this for my son because he's going down to Mexico. He works on Honeywell. They go, well, you got a choice. You know, your job's been moved down to Mexico, and we're doing this and closing down that, and you know this is coming for the last couple of years. And gosh darn it, you're a heck of a human being, and we'll give you some more time. You get another few months' worth of work and everything. If you'll go down to Mexico and mentor and kind of train your replacement, and then you go to Mexico, work a couple of weeks, come back for a week, go down for another couple of weeks, come up for a week. You keep doing that. You do that, you get a paycheck for longer while you train your replacement. And we love you. Well, this is a whole nother economy. Who do I blame? I blame Honeywell? Heck no. You know, I blame this freaking government. You know, why? Of course they're going down. Why do you think they would go down there? You know, it's because of just all the crap. I get him a computer so that he can communicate. You know, a little laptop so that he can do Skype, video phone, back and forth. Be able to hit translator on there, type in any phrase, you translate it, even get it to speak it. I mean, you know, this technology was never there before. Now, boom, tip of our fingers. How is that going to impact the future? Stay tuned. I got some goodies for you.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
One mind up. How about just the truth? I just want to know the truth. And where do you find the truth? You find it at the beginning. You keep asking why. You know, a lot of times I'll have guests on, and you may hear me do this. They'll go, you know, blah, blah, blah. Okay, why? Well, let's go, okay, why? You know, three whys, man, they usually fold like a wet napkin. You know, because they don't have a base fundamental truth that they're basing anything on. It's not principle. It's just cuz, you know, cuz. Somebody paid me to say it. So I want to get to this inception concept and why I know this movie is going to be enormously popular. It's going to be a blockbuster like The Big Boys. And there's a reason that I always knew that other movies would be a blockbuster, and this one's a little bit different. In other movies like, you know, V for Vendetta and Gladiator and Patriot and Lord of the Rings and Matrix and all these big blockbuster movies are always, you know, Braveheart, you know, that kind of stuff. It's always the individual versus the collective. It's always, you know, the one person that rises up against the man and shows that, you know, humanity will not be crushed. You cannot take, you know, I don't care how many people you vote, how many armies you have or so, an idea, the human spirit will prevail and, you know, there it goes. And you have all kinds of examples throughout history, most notably the American people. So it's part of our heritage, it's part of our culture, and it's supported. And it also, through other, you know, media, you know, through movies from India and so on like that, you can kind of see that they have the same kind of thing. You know, the individual, there's always the individual. Because no matter how collective beehive they try and make you and, you know, get you from the birth to death and Japanese duty to the emperor kind of thing, you know, you still always come back to the individual. They may have disciplines that will try and engineer that out of you, but I think that's our natural state. You know, that is the default setting for human beings, and it takes enormous amount of effort and social pressure to get you, back in. Well, there's a lot of cultures that want to do that very thing. They want to get you on the reservation. How do they do that? Well, they got to get you to want to do that. They get you at the beginning. I give you an example. Today, we were talking about this on the morning show, and there was a really good example of this. There was, in 2006, Janet Napolitano, when she was still governor of Arizona before she went to be head of the Gestapo, secretary of the Homeland Defense, whatever the heck she is. But what happened was proposals for universal preschool and all-day kindergarten are an increasingly popular policy solution for everything from low academic achievement to reducing crime to lowering the dropout rate, blah, 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 blah. Janet Napolitano called for, now this is 06, all right, this is from Reason Foundation. Janet Napolitano, as governor of Arizona, called for $8 billion annually in federal support for preschool. Now, this is when she was speaking as, some mucky muck with this, what was she here? Similarly responds, governor. Anyway, she was on this board of governors that had this. They were doing this in a lot of states, Georgia, Oklahoma, Florida, California, Washington, South Carolina, Virginia, West Virginia, Arizona, New Mexico, Washington. This was, we need more monies, okay? So they were committing a lot of money from the states, too. So I'm going, okay, why would they do this? The movement toward all-day kindergarten is also gaining popularity in the states. Currently, 9 states mandate full-day kindergarten. 7 states offer school districts financial incentives to offer full-day kindergarten. And then other states are yada, 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 yada. This is what was going on. We can't get the kids into government schools soon enough. Remember, it used to be public schools, government schools, was 1 through 6th grade or something like that early on. Well, they couldn't get them indoctrinated enough. That wasn't good enough. Maybe we need longer. Okay, we'll go junior high. We'll get them to 8th grade. Man, that's not working out. We need even longer. We'll go through this high school thing. Then we'll have public universities and so on, just transition. And they go, it's not like we can plant something in. We can't, give the origination of an idea, an inception of an idea into their head by how long we got to get them earlier. There's something that's planted deep in their psyche. There's something that's, deeper down that is wiping away all this programming that we're trying to do. So we need to get them, a kindergarten. Heck, isn't that even a German word? It means whatever it means. Kinder, kid, garden, I don't know. We planted kids. Okay, so we have kindergarten that's going to bring the children under control of a government-directed, mandated, organized, whatever thing. Okay? How'd that work out? They still got problems, man. They're just not staying under control. So then what do they do? All right, we're going to do Head Start. Head Start, we'll give them even earlier. Then we get preschool. Then we'll get billions of dollars. This is why I say I'm so optimistic. They will spend trillions of dollars over generations to try and turn us into batteries for the machine. They do this because they haven't been successful at doing it any other way. They can get us to be consumers, they can get us to be, but they can't change right and wrong. They can't change the concept that we just need to, the majority, somebody can do sanctions on a country because they want to be able to defend themselves. Not allowed. Why? Nobody ever asked that. It's the evil Ayatollah land of Iran, blah, 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 blah. Heck, they're not even Arab, they're Persian. Okay, so are they really a threat to us? Are we a threat to them? And I just got to ask, man, if I'm Iranian and I'm sitting there and I got to deal with this United States, you know, this military-industrial complex beating the crap out of everybody around me and has a history of doing it from the time in the 50s when they replaced a democratically elected leader there, and then they installed the Shah of Iran and all the brutality that went with that, and then the Ayatollahs, the religious leaders, rise up against them, and then they do it and bomb, and then you blah, 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 blah. You know, what the heck do you think was going to happen? I mean, are you stupid? You know, and somehow we have some moral authority to tell them what they can and can't do? You know, how about we just leave people alone? I don't want to be socially and economically engineered. I sure as heck know they don't. So I'm going, all right. So we'll argue that another day. But, you know, I'm going, but to be able to get us to accept this kind of thing, what do they have to do? How young do they have to go? Now, you know, was it Ceausescu, I think, and was it Romania? Or what? They were having women having babies for the state. Just cribs everywhere, just a bunch of kids, just raising them. You know, because they knew that, man, mom and dad screwing up, you know, these children for the state. You know, we got the Hitler Youth, man. It's just not working out. Even, you know, some of them just won't, you know, it was amazing how well it did work. You know, they're turning in the DARE program. Turning them parents. My daddy smoked marijuana. Get him, because I love him. Okay? You know, this is all just like experimentation on the ability to control people at a young age. At inception. At birth. Do we have to do it with chemicals? Do we have to do it with, you know, television, radio, the television frequency or something? You know, smells, cologne, Axe spray, fog. Walk into the bathroom, my kids are teenagers, like, holy crap, man, it's a chemical soup in here. All the crap they're putting on and spraying on and drinking and doing and mouthwashing and brushing, doing and goopy, whatever. Are you kidding me? And with four teenagers in one bathroom? Oh, my goodness. I was like, what the heck? What is it they're trying to accomplish? What is it that they want? They want to get you at the beginning of an idea, at the base fundamental. Because if you give someone an idea, like, let's give you an example. I have freedom's the answer. What's the question? Now, before we even start anything, before you even say whatever, I know more freedom's the answer to whatever your question is. Go ahead. What's your question? Okay. That's a fundamental axiom. That's just a, you know, I have over time come to, you know, have faith in that. I believe that from the beginning of first memories. I just want to be left alone. Okay. What if somebody comes in with another idea? You know, freedom is not the answer. How long is it going to take before that's just swept aside? How long does it take before you're just going, nah, I'm going back to my original premise, my foundational understanding of something? How do you get underneath? You have to get under. You have to waterboard that off of you. How do you unlearn the truth? You have to strip that away and replace it with something else. You have to get down. You have to have a, I don't know, tragedy. You have to have, you know, God, you know, stand in front of you and say, and perform miracles and tap you on the head or something. I mean, you know, there has to be major changes for us to unlearn what we learned from mama. Is it at 3 months? At what point will the government say you belong to the state? They're already doing it, Child Protective Services. Heck, they got a quota in Britain to take your kids away. This is, and we'll get into more detail in the next hour, but inception. How powerful is it to be able to plant an idea at the base of someone's consciousness, subconsciousness? Their awareness. It will define every decision they ever make from that point on. And it explains why it's so important for the bad guys to get us at as young an age as possible. It's not working for them. Why? We'll talk about it.